Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Today we have for you a brand new episode just come out from under the 60-day embargo period during which our participating newspapers have exclusive rights. Thanks for downloading, and I hope you enjoy the show. This story was first published on May 1st of 2022 under the headline, Is Treasure of Beach Gold Prospectors Still Out There? Here we go. Imagine you're a gold prospector from the Willamette Valley, on your way to the California gold fields in the first year of the 1848 gold rush. You're a little late to the party, and you've chosen to try to reach the gold fields in a somewhat unusual way, by going over the Coast Range to the beach and traveling south along the coast. As you make your way southward by the great ocean, you reach a broad expanse of black sand, and when the sun hits it just right, you see that it's actually glittering with tiny flakes and grains of gold. You're all alone on the beach. There aren't even any other footprints. Apparently nobody else was crazy enough to try to travel to the gold fields via Coos Bay. Everyone else in the area, such as there are, has decamped inland to the gold fields. It's just you, on the uninhabited edge of a continent, crunching $1 trillion worth of gold under your feet. Such was the situation in which the Grulot brothers, Charles and Peter, found themselves in the spring of 1849, near the mouth of the Coquille River in what today is Douglas County. By the way, the Grulot brothers are called John and Peter Grosseleus in some sources. Naturally, the brothers abandoned all ideas of going to California now. They settled in and got busy separating the yellow gold from the black sand, pounds and pounds of it. They had brought plenty of provisions with them for the journey, and the hunting was good, so they were able to live all summer without leaving their diggings. As their flour sacks were emptied of food, they were promptly filled back up with flour gold from the beach. And at the end of the summer, they returned home to the Willamette Valley with their pack animals creaking under the weight of hundreds of pounds of pure gold. They were both now rich men. Well, lots of miners had come back from California with gold that year, so the brothers' sudden wealth didn't attract much attention. Nor did their calculated vagueness when telling friends and neighbors where they'd spent their summer arouse any suspicions. All miners were like that. Nobody wanted to tell a bunch of potential claim jumpers where they had their stakes planted. Possession was 9/10 of the law, after all, and anyway, plenty of people in 1849 were perfectly willing to commit a secret murder on a lonely stretch of trail to seize control of a lucrative claim. So nobody did a whole lot of bragging if they actually hit pay dirt. So, when the next spring came, the brothers were easily able to slip away from any prying eyes and hurry back to the beach to spend another season making themselves even richer. And the same thing happened again the next year. In fact, it wasn't until 1853 that someone got wise and figured out where the brothers were going. Whoever it was that figured that out was much less discreet than the Grulot brothers had been. The word was out almost at once, and a colossal gold rush ensued as miners flocked to the beaches. Soon 1,000 men milled about on the black sands, staking claims for miles up and down the beach, Ruby L. Holt writes in her book. Cabins, stores, saloons, and gambling houses were hastily erected, becoming the boom town of Randolph. Whiskey flowed so freely that the stream along which the best diggings were located became known as Whiskey Run. Very quickly after that, the Grulot brothers sold their claims to two of the newcomers, the McNamara brothers. They cheerfully remarked that they had made enough money off the beach in their first 4 undisturbed years to last them a lifetime, and it was someone else's turn. They didn't mention any figures, but the McNamara brothers pulled $80,000 worth out in the first year after they bought the claims, and that was after the Grulot boys had spent 5 years skimming the cream. Well, the brothers packed up their animals and set off northward on the Randolph Trail, which was a beaten path along the Coast Range foothills to Coos Bay that roughly followed the same route as Seven Devils Road today. But they had $40,000 worth of gold in their saddlebags, and the two of them were almost celebrities in Randolph. Both of them were very nervous about the possibility that they might be robbed on the trail. Highway robbery was common there, since the bad guys knew that successful miners had to use that trail to get their gold out. So the boys scouted a good spot that they thought they could find again and cached the gold in a couple of gunpowder cans under a cedar stump, and then they continued on their way. Well, you probably have already guessed what happened next. In fine buried treasure style, they lost track of where they stashed the two cans. Neither of them returned for many years. They already had 5 years' worth on which to live, and it just didn't seem worth the trouble. So it wasn't until 20 years later, in 1873, that Peter, who was by then the only surviving brother, Charles had died in England, came back to the Coquille to withdraw his gold. Peter found the landscape so utterly changed that he had no idea where to even start looking for the distinctive cedar tree stump under which he'd stashed those cans. There were places where the Randolph Trail had changed completely, with old sections overgrown and barely discernible. There were other parts that had been burned over by a forest fire, which had destroyed all the snags and stumps and other dry wood in its path. Peter got some friends to help him, promising to split the gold with them, but their efforts were in vain. Other members of the Randolph community joined in as well, but nobody found the gold, and after a decade or so, the whole thing simmered down into one of those little bits of local legend. 50 more years went by. Then, in 1922, Peter Grulow's granddaughter, Lily Tully, came to town. She had a try for the gold as well, enlisting the help of a local timber cruiser. But after a year or so of hunting, they too were disappointed. A few years later, in 1931, a rumor started circulating, a fairly credible one, later given added weight by an article in the Portland, Oregonian newspaper, that the treasure had been found. According to the rumor, a young couple out prospecting had spotted a rusty gun barrel sticking out from under an old stump and investigated. They'd found two old gunpowder cans containing 150 pounds of fine gold. After that, the two of them had left the area as quickly as possible because the gold had been on private land, and they were afraid if anyone knew where they'd gotten it, the landowner and possibly Lily Tully would try to claim it. So, was this rumor true? Well, maybe. The amount of gold doesn't quite line up. 150 pounds of gold at 1853 prices was worth $51,000, not $40,000. But even if the rumor was true, it likely wasn't the same gold. Painted metal cans of the type gunpowder was sold in don't last 75 years in the Coast Range. The containers would have been rusted to nothing in just a few decades. In any case, it remains possible, if not particularly likely, that the contents of the original powder cans are still there, buried under the forest duff in a random spot in the middle of the forest, a cache of fine flower gold that would be worth $3.7 million today. But rather than tramping through the forest looking for this bonanza, modern-day gold miners would probably be better advised to head for the beach from which it originally came. The black sands of Oregon's beaches are still full of fine flower gold, especially in places that are far away from streams and creeks that can supply the water needed to pan or sluice them. The Oregon Parks Department will not let you use power equipment, so it's all done by hand, and it's hard work, and it's not very remunerative, but you can still get gold out of black sand layers all along the south coast today, especially the more southerly out-of-the-way beaches near Ophir, Pistol River, Port Orford, and, of course, Gold Beach. Key sources in this story included works by Ruby L. Hult and Kane Allen. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening, and I sure hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Check out our hub page at offbeatoregon.com to explore all the other things we do or to find the full citations and visuals that go with today's show. If you haven't already, check out our Offbeat Oregon books. They're basically revised, updated, and re-researched collections of these columns and podcasts arranged by topic. So far, we've done Heroes and Rascals of Old Oregon and Love, Sex, and Murder in Old Oregon, and the third title, Bad Ideas and Horrible People of Old Oregon, will be coming out later this summer. You can find them in hardcover and softcover, and in the case of Heroes and Rascals, audiobook, wherever you find your reading materials, or on Audible or Amazon, or, you know, those places. This podcast is covered by a Creative Commons license. For details, offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Offbeat Oregon History episodes come out once per weekday, usually around 6 a.m., so it won't be long before the next episode is on your device and ready for you to queue up and enjoy. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day and the weekend, too, with good stuff. Bye now.